This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Jules Von Hepp.
Hello, I'm Sarah Powell.
And welcome to Wobble, a podcast about happiness and body confidence.
Because we all wobble.
This episode of Wobble is with feminist, activist and all-round period goddess Gabby Edlin. Gabby is the founder of Bloody Good Period, which provides sanitary products to refugees and to asylum seekers. And Gabby campaigns around all kinds of issues surrounding periods and period poverty. And if you are someone who feels passionate about a certain cause, or maybe you even want to start your own campaign, you will absolutely love this chat, which does start with us talking about our chin hairs. So do enjoy.
The thing is about chin hairs, they come out of nowhere.
Yeah, they're not there. And they're thick and dark.
Yeah, and then suddenly they're 2 inches long. And I have one in the middle of this cheek and one in the middle of this cheek on either side.
Dimples.
And then they're not now. We're all going through the same thing here. Look, I want to, there's so many things that I want to talk to you about. How old is Bloody Good Period now? It's two years old.
Exactly.
Is it today?
Well, not today, but like this month.
For those who don't know, what is it?
So we are a charitable organisation and we give period supplies to asylum seekers and refugees. And that's all done through like drop-in centres, food banks, that kind of thing. Places that people are already going to, but pads just weren't available on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And, you know, it turns out that periods are every month. So you
need
Who knew?
Yeah.
You need those products every month without fail, not just one big dump, you know, sometimes. It's such a tiny little part of asylum seekers' experience, but it's just one less thing to worry about.
We've all been out and about and got our period or realised that you haven't got a tampon with you.
Yeah.
And in that moment, it's all you can think about.
Yeah.
You can't do another physical thing until you've sorted that out.
Yeah.
You started going to drop-in centre and they weren't giving out sanitary products.
Yeah, so I started volunteering at one and I asked if they were going to be giving them out. And the response was like, you know, it was a really lovely person who told me, but she was basically like, yeah, we give them out, but like only really in an emergency. And I was like, it's always an emergency.
Yeah.
Like you said, like it's all you can think about. Like if you don't have the stuff that you need, you freak out.
Yeah.
And so going through that every single month, I mean, what will that do for your anxiety? What will that do for your mental health and your physical health?
Because was yours a homeless shelter?
No, so it was asylum seeker.
Right. Yeah.
So that's somebody who has fled their country or, you know, homeland because of trauma and can't stay in their country anymore.
Yeah.
Possibly people who've been sex trafficked. And so it's their legal right. They come to whichever country they can get to. And in the UK, they are asylum seekers when they put their claim forward, basically. And that can last up to like 15 years.
Wow.
It's insane. And they get £37 a week to live on and that is it. They're not allowed to work. They're not even really allowed to volunteer, most of them. So a lot of them are homeless.
It's amazing, isn't it? Because I had no idea asylum seekers couldn't work.
Yeah. It's complicated.
Yeah, of course.
And it took me a while to sort of actually get my head around, like, actually, like, okay, so then you become a refugee. Once you've been granted status, you become a refugee. And you are allowed to work when you're a refugee. You're expected to work.
Yeah.
But actually, if you've been seeking asylum for like 10 years, as a repeated claim. You know, you haven't got work experience for 10 years, so yeah. you're going to find it really difficult to find work. And also, so many of the people that we work with just got such traumatic backgrounds, and their mental health is just to the point where they can't work.
Yeah.
It's bloody tough. Like, yeah. it really is.
So you're volunteering.
Yeah.
You're working at the drop-in. Yeah. You're sort of giving out food and, yeah. and the kind of essentials, if you
exactly,
like. Yeah.
Exactly.
And so when you asked and they said, well, we only give them out in an emergency, yeah. what was your response?
So it was over email. So I sent it and I got that back and I was just like, that was like just this moment of like clarity where I was like, a woman might ask you for it one time
yeah.
in an emergency, but like she's not going to ask second, third, fourth time, because that is what a period is. Like
yeah.
it's not like a plaster where you cut your finger and then, oh shit, we need a bandage.
Yeah.
It's over and over and over. So I was like, right, we need to put this into place where there's no sort of judgment with this. No one has to ask.
Yes.
Because that is embarrassing to have to go and ask someone for your pads. It's not nice. No one wants to do that.
No.
So I wanted to make them available,
yeah.
basically, and obvious. And so like even the first time, so when I responded to the emergency comment, and I was like, look, I'm going to try and do something about this. And I put a status on Facebook and just, I thought like no one would care. I thought I was going to get a few packs of pads, but they just came in like a flood.
Yes.
Like an actual pun intended flood
yes.
into my flat. Then when we had the first lot, I brought them to the drop-in centre, and the lovely women who were sort of a bit more experienced in doing the drop-in centre said, we're just going to pop them under the table. We'll just give them out, you know, as and when. And I was just like, no way. No, because people won't ask.
Yeah, of course.
They will be shy. So I put them all on the table. From then on, I took over the period table, basically.
Yeah.
And now we've extended to 16 other drop-in centres. And we make a real point of being like, please make them available. Be generous
yes.
with them.
I think it's a really good point that people don't ask. That had never
yeah.
occurred to me
yeah.
before. What's really interesting is that Bloody Good Period started as something that you were doing. You were just a volunteer. You were
yeah.
on your own. This was kind of your thing that you did alongside work, wasn't
yeah.
it? And this
yeah.
is like, you're volunteering. How did you do it? Once a week? Something like that?
So the drop-in was once a month, but I was basically like every single night was like unpacking boxes.
Yeah.
So I was doing it every day.
Yeah.
And because it grew so quickly, people were sending things from like, because it was an Amazon wish list from
yeah.
like all over the world, and like responding to notes. A lot of things happen when you do something like that, and
yeah.
everyone has advice.
Yes.
And so dealing with that. And honestly, for a good 6 months, I don't think I actually had a volunteer because I didn't know how to ask. I didn't think people really cared.
Yeah.
And not in like a, I'm the only one who cares about this stuff, but more in the way that like, I don't want to make anyone, you know, I don't want to make anyone help me.
Yeah.
So I was literally lifting the boxes myself, like every month, had this storage locker. Like, it was very intense.
When did you kind of create it into officially Bloody Good Period?
That was quite quick.
Right.
So because I've got like a design sort of brandingy, design creativity, social change.
Yes, sure.
You know that.
All of it, yes.
All of that background, it was quite quick because I knew what to do. And I'd done a master's at St. Martin's a couple of years before. It
yeah.
was about like design to social change, basically. So I had it in my head how it would go. I just whipped up this logo. It was terrible. Oh, it was all so bad. Like, it was all, like, I say I'm a designer, I'm not a very good designer. Because like, I can do it doesn't mean I should. I came up with a name. I was on the toilet.
Yeah.
And it just was like, oh, Bloody Good Period.
Yes.
Course. I think it was even just Bloody Good at first. And I was like, no, we need to say Period. It was really quick. I think that was after like a week or so.
So you made it kind of an official thing. Because this could easily just be you 2 years on still going to
yeah.
drop-in centre
yeah.
and giving out
yeah.
the pads to those people who need them.
Yeah.
So actually, did you know that you wanted it to be a
yeah.
bigger thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. And I started saying it out loud to people. And people...
Great.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I just think I might make an organisation about periods. There were men who encouraged it.
Yes.
But there were a good few men who were like, I just think if it was a thing, it would have been done already.
Wow.
Or I just don't think, you know, a charity's a lot of work or like. And I was like, I know it's a lot of work because I'm doing it. But most people I spoke to started to be like, oh yeah, like why has this not been done already? Or why has it not been done in the capacity that it has? Like, because there were women doing it around the world, like a little bit at a time, doing like little drives or
yeah.
collections or whatever. But the thing that it struck me, like being in the drop-in centre, was that we have to have this every month, otherwise people won't trust us.
Yes, yeah.
And that was the thing that I realised, like, really quickly. We can't just do this one big collection and then they're expected to be, like, grateful and that you've got pads for, what, 2 months? So we were like, right, we're not going to promise anything to anybody until we know we've got a year of supplies.
Yes.
So that's why we're still growing really slowly. That is the main part of it. Like, these are people that you're, like, working with and they're just people like the rest of us. And they are also people who have been let down numerous times. Doesn't matter who they are. Could be the Home Office, could be lawyers, could be detention centres. And for us to come in and be like, here's some pads, and then not be there again.
Yeah.
Like, it's just another person letting them down. So I was really determined that we would not do that.
Yeah.
That would be the most important thing, and that we'd be, like, generous about it and be like, you get to say how much you need. We don't, you know, dole stuff out. We don't give single pads or anything like that. It's no. Like good quality packs. Yes. Of pads.
Let's talk about how it's widened out to kind of this wider period of poverty. Yeah. Which I think it must have been something that you didn't expect.
Yeah, we didn't start the movement. Like, the movement was growing already. I'd read an article by Maya Oppenheim in Vice, who had written about, like, the homeless period, and that's what had got in my head in the first place. I just realised that there wasn't anything specific for asylum seekers and refugees.
Yeah.
And also, they didn't, within the movement, what I could see was that a lot of it seemed to be quiet and, oh, we're just going to do this really quietly. And I was like, no, like, it's too late to be quiet. We have to make a noise. We have to be annoying about this. We have to make people listen. That is how I think the movement grew. It just stopped being about, you know, let's just sort of quietly get this sorted, which I think some of the organisations were maybe doing. I felt really strongly that we had to make something that wasn't about us bestowing dignity and all these words.
Yes.
And also, I really wanted it to become something that wasn't about, I'm using inverted commas, like, tackling shame and stigma.
Yeah.
Because you can't tackle shame and stigma if you're talking about tackling shame and stigma. You've actually just got to go and do it.
Yeah.
We just have to jump in and be like, we're not going to be an organisation that talks about tackling shame. We're going to be the organisation that actually is just doing it.
Yeah.
And talking about period.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's really interesting because there's been this whole sort of lexicon and this whole discussion around periods for a long time. They've been very private. They've been very quiet. It's been, don't really talk about it. And I feel like what you have done is taken it, put it in literally massive, big black and white letters and gone, it's okay.
Yeah.
You can have a period and you can talk about it and it's all right.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting is that a lot of men are running with that because it's not, if you are a person, chances are you know someone who menstruates.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
I'm
going
to give it a go. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You work with, but you're right. There has been this huge shame over, and I want to keep saying privacy because it's all kind of been a very whispered and very quiet thing.
Yeah.
So I mean, how have you been able to do that, do you think? Has it just literally been saying it and keeping on at it and keeping visible?
I think so. I think it's like a confidence thing.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't embarrass me. I don't know if it's because, like, I'm from a family of girls. I've got three sisters. Went to an all-girls school. Me and my friends are very open about this kind of thing. I mean, not to the point of, like, you know, ridiculousness, but I was just like, I'm not embarrassed about this.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I don't think anyone else should be, because everyone has their right to their sort of levels and boundaries of what they feel is appropriate. And actually, I don't normally talk about my own period that much, because I don't think anyone actually wants to know about my personal period.
Yes.
But it just aggravated me or pissed me off so hard that we'd got to the point where that secrecy and privacy meant that there were girls and young people living in period poverty.
Yeah.
That was the thing that pissed me off the most. It was like, well, people buy toilet paper because it is seen as an essential.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter is that period supplies are not seen as essential.
Yeah.
And that shame and secrecy was adding to that.
Yeah.
It was helping.
Because
that.
I don't think a lot of people will know quite the extent of period poverty.
Yeah.
Because it's girls not going to school,
yeah,
isn't it? Because they can't afford, yeah, tampons and pads. And it, yeah, is because you must have seen kind of the level that it, yeah, has reached. And, yeah, what's kind of been the most surprising bit for you?
The thing, because we work with mostly women, actually, not girls, because they're asylums, because they're usually adult.
Yeah.
And we know that people are just staying in their house. It's not like, oh, just, you know, shove a sock in there even. It is literally, people are just not leaving their houses because they can't, and they, yeah, feel that they can't. I actually spoke to a woman on Sunday about it, and I was saying to her that we often get journalists and documentary makers saying, can we interview some of the women who are living in period poverty? And I always say, no, 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 no. These are really vulnerable women. And then I suddenly was like, oh God, what if I'm like not allowing women to speak on, you know, on their own behalf? And so I started to like interview some of the women that we work with. And actually what they said to me was, even just thinking about a period triggers a lot of trauma because of, you know, it's not just as simple as just once you didn't have a pad. It's a constant thing. You know, it's related to so many other things. If you're going through a really difficult time, your period might be a bit heavier or irregular. It might be tied up with pregnancy or lack thereof. And these women were telling me, like, it's not just saying, oh, I haven't got any pads. It's so much more than that for them. And that's why we're really protective over them. But also that is what people need to understand the impact of not having the products is.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, the term period poverty is almost, it's misleading. We use it, I'm not criticising. Like,
yeah.
It's misleading because the whole issue is not just about those girls who aren't going to school or people who can't afford pads. There's this movement called menstrual equity, which I really like subscribe to. It's by this New York lawyer called Jennifer Weiss-Wolf, who's wrote this amazing book called Periods Gone Public. And she basically talks about that we need to like be pushing for menstrual equity, not to end period poverty. Because menstrual equity then includes absolutely anyone who is affected by periods. So that's like women who were getting, the woman got fired at work in America because she bled on her seat.
Oh my God.
She wasn't allowed to go for a break. And so she leaked on her seat and she was fired for being unhygienic. And like that, you know, she was a working woman.
Yeah.
There's nothing to do with poverty.
Yes, yes.
Or like, well, you know, you hear about like women working in factories who aren't allowed to go and change their pads. They don't have breaks, you know, often enough to change their pads. Or, you know, schoolgirls being putting their hand up and asking to go to the toilet and teachers being like, no.
Yeah.
And a girl, I think last week, like bled and leaked onto her seat because she wasn't allowed to go. I mean, that is not period poverty.
Yes.
But that is 100 issues around periods that still aren't solved.
Because it does seem to still to be coming back to this point of, oh, don't say it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't say it out loud or, yeah, don't tell anyone.
Yeah, and, exactly.
But, and everybody's got a responsibility around, yeah, that. It's not just women and it's,
no,
not just people who menstruate. Everybody's got a responsibility to go, oh, you're on your period. Oh, right, I hear you. Yeah, you,
yeah,
know, do you need anything?
Yeah.
Or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But just everybody should be allowed to say it and to,
yeah,
talk about it.
Yeah.
And I feel like the amazing thing about Bloody Good Period is you've really started that. And we are at the beginning of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is a big ship to turn round,
yeah,
for everyone. Do you know what I mean? Because it's been a certain way for a long time.
Yeah.
I really wanted to talk to you about, because I know there'll be people listening to Wobble who do volunteering or who don't, who really want to. And I feel like a lot of people would love to give something back. And a lot, mm-hmm, but it's hard to know where to start,
yeah,
I think, for a lot of people. First of all, yeah, what's the if you really want to do something, and if there's an area like you did that you feel really passionately about,
mm-hmm,
what's the first thing you can do?
So do some research. That's the thing to do. So even, you know, if it's something to do with periods, if it's, I don't know, you want to do some sort of breast cancer awareness, or you want to do something about refugees or anything like that, look at what's there. it's likely that there will be something there, you know, whether it's like volunteering with Help Refugees or whether it's that a charity has made it possible for you to do a collection. Start small.
Yes.
Do your research and start small, basically. Don't try and start an organisation overnight. That's not what I did, and that's not what anyone should do. But it's got to be something that you really care about and that really pisses you off, basically. Yeah. Like, keeps you up at night because you're like, oh, how is this a thing?
Yeah.
Look on like volunteer websites. Like, there's loads of them. I mean, I was doing volunteering long before Bloody Good Period. It's not the first thing I've done. And I was doing like activism and stuff like that. You know, that wasn't the start of my journey. I've been doing it for years and years, and it does give you experience.
And it is good to do it with somebody else, normally, isn't it?
Or, I think
because
so.
Because I suppose then, like you did, you started volunteering somewhere and at the drop-in centre. You saw the gap, didn't you? Because
exactly.
You saw what was happening already.
Yeah.
So there wasn't, you know, you knew what was already out there, and then you could go, oh, and it'd be great to have this as well,
exactly,
actually on top of it. Because we should say, you've gone full time now, haven't you?
Yeah, as of Monday.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
So 2 years on, this is your full time job now. And can I ask, are you getting paid from this?
I am.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, because that is a dream for a lot of people as well who'll be listening, who think, God, I really love my charity work, or I feel really passionately about this issue, but I don't know how I would ever leave my job to be able to do it. So what's kind of enabled you to be able to go, okay, I can commit to this full time?
So you've got to get people around you who believe in you and believe not just in the things you're doing, but you.
Yeah.
And you have to show people why you have to be doing it, basically.
Yeah.
And that sounds a little bit like egotistical, but like that's sort of the only way to be actually doing it. But also you have to gather people around you who care about the thing.
Yeah.
And that is what's happened. We've got so many volunteers because people just care about this. And if people don't care, make them care.
Yes.
Find a way to make people care. Like, identify with, it's quite rare apparently that we have like a very young volunteer base. Everyone's pretty much like under 40.
Right.
The way that we got people our age to care was talk to people in a way that you do talk to your friends. Our sort of marketing, I say our, it was when it was just me, like, so it was really early on, but it wasn't like these poor women.
Yes.
It was actually like, we know you care, we know you're as outraged as we are.
Yeah.
Like, let's do something about it together.
Yeah.
It sounds sort of vague, but that's the way to make people care, is to know who you're talking to and to not worry about talking to everybody.
Yes.
Because you can't. Our website, for example, is not for a 60-year-old man, but it is for, you know, a young woman.
Yeah.
Or even like a young non-binary person or trans person, because we are so committed to being trans inclusive that we don't have gendered language on our website specifically.
I think it's a huge issue. I think there's a huge issue around language. There's a huge issue around feminism. And I feel like just because you subscribe to feminism, it doesn't mean we all agree.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We don't all agree about the kind of language
and
the stance and the viewpoint.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, we probably all want similar things.
Yeah.
But I feel like it would be a shame if that was a reason to not do something.
Yeah.
Because, like, you've been really upfront. You've had a lot of crap, haven't you? You know, from what you've been trying to do, from various groups and people and individuals as well, who are quite affronted with either the language that you've used or just generally what you're kind of striving for.
Yeah.
Because it's change.
Yeah.
And I feel like change always makes people uncomfortable on any level. People don't really like it. And especially if it's something that they've felt a lot of shame around, or they've grown up with a certain, like, this is how you treat periods, this is how you think about them, this is how you talk about them, and then suddenly you're like, well, no, actually, what if we do it this way? Somebody's always going to get upset, aren't they? I love what you were saying earlier when you first started it, and you were like, oh, I think I'm going to do this thing, I'm going to start this organization, and a lot of people said to you, there's probably something already, or, well, it's a lot of work. For anyone listening who wants to start out anything, they want to start an organisation or a business or just a project, what would you say to them if they were getting those kinds of comments? Because it's easy. I've been guilty of it. I've told somebody about something and they've gone, well, you can't really make any money.
Yeah.
And I've gone, oh, okay, then, well, I won't.
You know?
So what's your advice?
I mean, you've got to learn to trust your gut.
Yeah.
I can't express that enough. Because there isn't a right answer. You know, maybe it wouldn't work. Maybe it will. Like, they don't know. That's just their opinion.
Yeah.
But if you feel strongly that this is something that you can do and that you should do, then fucking do it.
Yeah.
Like, they're not right any more than they might be wrong. And if you feel that you can do it, like, give it a go. If it goes to shit, so what? I've done so many things leading up to this that have not gone right. You know, I'd started a jewellery business, and then I did a greetings card business. I did wedding invitations. I've done loads of really, like, I tried to do this whole, like, thing after Brexit that was called, like, Love Our Neighbours. I think I've still got the website. But, like, it was shit.
Yeah.
You know, but that was how I got to where I am now.
Yeah.
Try things out. If it goes wrong, it doesn't matter. You've not lost anything, really.
Yeah.
I would say don't put money in these things. That's what I would say. Try and do this without putting any money into something, because actually we live in a world now where so much of the stuff you need is free.
Mm.
Advertising, marketing, all of this. Get friends involved. Just put call outs on Twitter. It is hard work doing this, but it is worth it.
Yeah. There's also a vulnerability, isn't there? Because if you're asking for something, it must be that you believe in the bigger picture. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like the cause is greater than your moment of embarrassment, I suppose. But I've always been amazed, and I'm sure you were, when you first asked for pads and sanitary stuff. People are amazing.
Yeah.
People really want to help.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I feel like if you're being genuine, if you're one of those people who asks for something every 10 minutes from people on Facebook, okay, it's going to be hard. But I feel like if you've got one thing that you're like, I believe in this, this is why I'm doing it, it's, and you're authentic with it, I'm always amazed how incredible people are.
People are amazing. That is the thing that has kept me going, like, from the first post that I did. I think it makes a difference that we didn't ask for money.
Yeah.
And we actually still don't often ask for, we very rarely, I think, if at all, ask for money. We ask for products. And so people like to be able to send things that they know, I'm sending pads, that's going into someone's knickers.
Yes.
Nothing else. Nothing else is going to happen along the way.
Yes.
You do have to pay people.
Yeah.
Because we can't work for free. You can't pour from an empty glass, and you can't do this properly unless there are people whose time is being valued in a monetary sense.
Yes.
We've all got to pay rent.
Yeah.
But there is something I think that people really identify with sending products.
Yeah.
And that's not all we're about. We're about campaigning and activism as well. But the product is the sort of, that shows you how great people are.
Yeah.
And the notes that we get, oh my God. Like, that's what keeps me going.
Mm.
Like, regardless. Or when people send us, like, messages. When we did Bloody Funny, our comedy night the other night, someone just sent the most gorgeous email afterwards, just saying, like, how she felt, like, being in a funny feminist environment, and how much she, like, identified with Bloody Good Period and the cause. And that meant everything to me. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
People are fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
And people care. And just because someone might not be able to afford to send £100 to a charity every week doesn't mean they haven't got something else to offer.
Yeah.
And that's what we appreciate so much about our volunteers, that they give their time and they give their, like, muscles, you know, carrying stuff. And oh, I could get weepy and emotional about this, how brilliant people are.
Yeah. Gabby, it's been an absolute joy. I could keep you here all afternoon. We could get a drinks trolley. We always ask everyone who comes on Wobble, if you wobble, what's the thing that makes you wobble?
I was going to say relationships and boys and or girls. I was wobbling about that, but I've just come to the conclusion that I'm just going to be on my own for a bit.
Okay.
And it feels really lovely. So I had a wobbly breakup last year, and that took a long time to get through. And actually, I'm finally at the stage where I'm like, I'm actually really happy enjoying my own company, and these things will come to me when I'm ready for them.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I'm in the right place, then I'll put myself in that area. Right now, I'm just sort of romantically involved with menstrual products, which I'm really happy with. I'm quite happy with that right now.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Gabby, thank you so much for being on Wobble.
Thank you.
If people want to get involved, if they want to help, where do they go?
bloodygoodperiod.com.
Okay.
Find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Bloody Good Period. There's loads of ways you can get involved, but just head to the website and that's where you'll find it all.
Gabby, thank you so much for being on Wobble.
Thank you.
I love how passionate Gabby is, and I think that actually her passion is quite infectious. And I think we all have a calling, you know, we all have something that really fires us up. And for me, it's about people being kinder to themselves. And for Jules, it's about people really loving their bodies and really feeling comfortable in their skin. So whatever it is that you feel strongly about, I do hope that that has helped to inspire you a little bit. This is the third series of Wobble, and there is a whole back catalogue of episodes with amazing people just like Gabby. So do go back. And if you've already listened, we always say go back and listen again, because the there'll be something else that you pick up on, something else that you kind of that means something to you now. And if you're into it, why not like, subscribe? That would be absolutely wonderful. And we will see you very soon for another excellent guest on Wobble.